I mean, anybody who tells you they know what the future of journalism is now is blowing smoke.
Hi, I'm Nick Gillespie with Reason TV, and today we're talking with Bill Keller, who spent most of his career as a reporter and editor at the New York Times, serving as the paper's executive editor from 2003 to 2011. In early 2014, he left the Gray Lady to head up the Marshall Project, a new nonprofit news organization that seeks to bring attention to the nation's broken criminal justice system. Bill, thanks for sitting with us.
You're welcome.
Talk a little bit about the Marshall Project's mission. And what are you hoping to achieve with this?
You know, the mission is journalistic, not it's not advocacy.
Right.
We don't have an agenda of specific reforms we want to see enacted. But the mission is to raise the issue's profile, to stimulate debate, create a sense of urgency about the condition of the criminal justice system.
How does journalism do that? You know, obviously there's political activism and advocacy, and you know, what does journalism bring to that felt need for change?
It brings information. On subjects like this, it's often information that's hard to get, and honestly, information that people aren't eager to read about. You know, the criminal justice system engages a demographic that is not your newspaper reading public for the most part, you know, which is one reason that editors have cut back on coverage of these issues. I mean, they cover crime, but they don't really cover the criminal justice system.
What are the pieces that you've been most, that you think most fully embody what you're trying to do so far?
Well, it's a range. We're doing longer investigative pieces, we're doing longer sort of magazine-style narratives, and then we're doing a pretty steady flow of daily pieces where we aim to find angles that are being overlooked or undercovered or miscovered. For our debut a month or so ago, we did a partnership with the Washington Post, meaning basically we gave them a piece that we've been working on for a while about lawyers who blow the deadline for death penalty cases, meaning that their clients miss the last and most important round of appeals. And I like that story for a couple of reasons. One of them was it's big and complicated, and I think, you know, it's always a challenge to do complicated well, and something that I've always regarded as one of the highest ambitions of journalism. And also, it was a story that was mostly about guilty people. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to generate sympathy for the wrongfully convicted. The Innocence Project does heroic work, but the criminal justice system mostly engages people who are guilty, and nonetheless, it fails us.
What led you to leave your comfortable perch at the Times? I mean, you had earned your column and everything to start for a kind of moderately funded or tenuously funded, smaller functioning news startup.
You mean you want to hear about my midlife crisis?
Yeah, if that's what it was.
No, it wasn't a midlife crisis. Although it was, I guess, partly motivated by a desire to have a next act. Mm-hmm. I was at the Times for 30 years. I had some of the best jobs in the world, first and foremost being a foreign correspondent in times of real upheaval.
In South Africa and Russia.
You can't complain about a perch as an op-ed columnist at the New York Times. You've got a great audience and all kinds of freedom. But I did find that I sort of missed just the sitting around with a bunch of smart people trying to figure out a problem. The problem might be, how are you going to cover the Arab Spring? Or it might be...
So I'm hearing you saying there aren't any smart people left at the New York Times?
No, there are lots of smart people at the New York Times, but a columnist role there is pretty much lonely. You don't spend a lot of time consulting.
You know, in your fascinating 2013 online debate with Glenn Greenwald about journalism and what makes for good or bad journalism, you expressed the view that suspending passion helps make for more effective, better journalism. And there's a variety of interesting pieces on the site related to criminal justice reform, but the framing and the headlines are pretty dispassionate. Reason covers the same issues from the same perspective, but with headlines meant to invoke kind of outrage and, provoke empathy provoke. I mean, basically, what's going on with your ethos there? Like what's the play that you're making?
I mean, first of all, I should say I know that you guys have a passionate interest in criminal justice because Andrew Cohen, who does our daily newsletter, dotes on...
Oh, great.
On links to Reason. My instincts are to try to keep the temperature low to have a rational discussion, not a screaming match. But we, you know, I do like headlines that make you want to read the story.
I mean, everybody seems to be consuming more news from more sources, or at least more information and more media. Do you think that readers and consumers of media are more sophisticated now, and they're, or are they, you know, is the kind of a BuzzFeed or an Upworthy style headline, you know, a clickbait headline, the only way to really catch people's attention?
You know, I like to think that people are sophisticated enough to actually pick and choose serious, in-depth reporting, and the, I mean, the evidence is an awful lot of them are drawn to cat videos and, you know, buzzy headlines and listicles. You know, I'm not above using a listicle if it will get somebody to read about the death penalty or the fraught condition of police community relations.
In the debate with Greenwald, he said that objectivity is a suffocating constraint on how reporters are permitted to express themselves, and it produces a self-neutering form of journalism that, and he said, that becomes as ineffectual as it is boring. You know, give your capsule response to that. Is he right, or is he partly right? Is he just off, you know, off the reservation?
Well, no. I mean, he's partly right. I mean, look, I read a lot of polemical writing. Right. I enjoy it. I like a good argument. You know, it gets the blood flowing and it makes people think. That's great. I read Glenn Greenwald. But I think that there's a really important place for journalism that sees as its obligation to get the reader's trust.
Right.
And you do that by sort of suppressing, you know, I don't like to use the word objective because it conjures up some sort of philosophical perfect state of truth. I prefer impartial. But I think to make a deliberate discipline out of laying aside your passions, convictions, and prejudices, and to try to see your way through to the truth, small t, I think is an extremely valuable discipline. It doesn't mean that you fall into false equivalencies. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, the evidence will often tell you that one point of view has more merit than another.
And your work, I mean, at the Marshall Project, it's not as if this form of objectivity or this form of kind of measured analysis doesn't actually have a point of view, because, I mean, the stories you tell all kind of come to the same conclusion. Right, that the criminal justice system is in desperate need of reform.
Right. Most of the stories are about dysfunction in the system, although we're making a concerted effort to find examples of things that work, which we'll look at skeptically, but we'll highlight them when we find them.
Do you think that in terms of social change, I guess a larger project of social change, I mean, you have political activism and advocacy, a policy change, and then within the journalism space, is it often a function of kind of overlapping, like people moving in the same direction? So you might have activist bloggers doing one thing and polemical journalists, and then people who are doing more along the lines of what you're doing, and is it kind of the gestalt of that that actually changes things?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think journalism, you know, the actual change is, at least the final stages of it, is in the hands of people who are elected, people who make policy, and advocates who draft legislation for them. But what journalists can do is create a context where the advocates get listened to and the policymakers get persuaded. And that's true both of the, you know, straight ahead journalism that we try to practice and the more polemical journalism.
You're working now at a 501c3, a nonprofit research and educational institution. Do you think that's the future of journalism, or a big future of a big part of the future for journalism as a kind of funding mechanism?
Is nonprofits?
Yeah.
I think it's a future. I don't know how big. Anybody who tells you they know what the future of journalism is now is blowing smoke. I like to refer to us as nonprofit on purpose.
Right.
It's distinct from the rest of the media world, which is just nonprofit.
Although, I mean, even at the Times, it's not so, is it that it's not profitable, or it's that it's not as profitable?
I'm being glib, obviously.
But talk a little bit about that, because that seems, I mean, to go from, say, a 30% return on investment to a 10% return on investment, it seems to be cataclysmic, whereas most industries in America are, you know, lucky to make any money. So how does that create such an earthquake in journalism?
Well, first of all, people had sort of built their lives around the 30% return on investment. And second of all, an awful lot of journalistic ventures these days are not anywhere close to 10% return on investment or any return on investment. And you know, and for most people in this business, it's personal. You've seen friends laid off. You've seen newspapers scrap their print editions or go to twice a week. You've seen the kind of stories that really should be covered, you know, state capitals, state legislatures, you know, going uncovered, which are, you know, places that somebody really ought to be paying close attention to.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. For Reason TV, I'm Nick Gillespie, and we've been talking to Bill Keller, who's heading up the Marshall Project, which is a great nonprofit investigative journalism outfit dedicated to criminal justice reform. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.